¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. Really engaging, fun conversation with author. I'm almost hesitant to say new author, because his brother's written like he's been doing this for, you know, 20, 40 years, you know. But the book Central Park West is a crime novel, which is quite the rage from New York to D.C. to Miami to California. People love it. I'm glad we're talking about it. I do want to shift a little bit because I got James Comey. So, you know, don't get this moment too often. I will start big and then we can get a little bit more narrow in the thinking. And what's your assessment right now when you're looking at, as someone who's been inside the bubble with the former president, certainly your leadership of the FBI, and sort of the fits and starts of all of that? How are you assessing the institution right now? We've got Republicans running around talking about defunding the FBI. These are the same people who were bitching about the Democrats, those Democrats who were talking about defunding local police, and they want to defund the friggin' FBI. Yeah. We know that has an impact, whether you're talking about local police and certainly the men and women who serve in the agency, or morale. It has an impact on how they go about their jobs. What's your assessment of where things are right now?
Yeah, I think the agency is suffering. By the agency, I mean the men and women who make it up. Look, it's insane to think the Republicans are walking around saying the FBI is a bunch of leftist Marxist targeting Republicans. It's just anyone who knows the FBI and law enforcement, that's just crazy.
It's crazy.
But people keep saying it. And look, even though people inside the FBI know it's nonsense, know this sense, which the fact that they've heard from both wings of the politically engaged part of our world,
right,
that you're out to get my team, they know it's silliness, but it hurts their ability to do the job, because at the heart of their ability to do the job is being seen as an other in American life. When they knock on a door, promise a witness something, or stand up in a courtroom and say, here's what I found in this executive's drawer, or here's what I heard, or here's what I saw, they have to be seen not as Republicans or Democrats, but as the good people, just trying to figure out what's true, because that's what they are in reality. And not being seen that way gets in the way of their ability to protect America, to protect communities. And so they're feeling that and feeling a little bit of pain from that. Now, I say it that way because I think they also know in the long run, they'll be fine. The American people understand the nature of this institution, but at the margins, it makes the work harder. And that's a source of pain for them.
From that very awkward moment that was captured of Trump calling you as you were trying to fade into the curtain.
Yeah. Yes.
And you're what are you, 6'5", 6'6"?
6'8".
6'8", 6'8". Yeah, you're a big boy. You know, it's only so much hiding a brother your size can do. I mean, the curtains in the White House are tall, but, you know. And from that moment where you get pulled forward, and then the various narratives that unfolded thereafter, culminating in Trump firing you in 2017, I guess two parts. That image for me in watching it Because I know Trump, and I knew what he was doing in that moment. He was marking his territory in that moment with you. I don't think people really appreciated that. Probably some do now. But when you look at it, he was really kind of marking, this is my FBI director.
Yes, yes.
I control. So I'm going to show you how much I could tell everyone in the room I control you, and to let you know I control you. I'm pulling you up and I'm force this image where you have to come because I called you. You have to shake my hand because I want you to. And a lot of people miss that subtlety about Trump, which in some sense is not so subtle. But how did that have an impact as you look at the arc thereafter on your thinking about the job and the relationship of independence from the White House as the FBI director?
I mean, I saw it in the moment. That was an event in the Blue Room on the ground floor of the residence, the White House residence. And at first I thought it was a nice idea. My staff said, President wants to host a reception for the leaders of the agencies who safeguarded the inauguration, which is a lot of agencies. And so I knew my colleagues from Secret Service and Park Police and DC Police would be there. And I know these people and like these people. And so I thought, well, that's kind of nice, but I don't want to go because it's in the middle of the NFL conference championship games. And so I want to watch football. Why is the president having this on a Sunday late afternoon? But then my team said, no, you got to go. So I go and I'm comfortable. And then I see his staff bring in TV Klieg lights. And I thought, oh God.
There we go.
So I really did stand against the curtain and didn't think it was going to protect me until his eyes passed me and he called the head of the Secret Service up. And I thought, why did he not see me? I'm a 6'8" white guy standing against this curtain. And it's a true story. I looked at my suit and I thought, whoa, my suit kind of matches this curtain. So I leaned farther back. True story. I leaned farther back into the curtain. So why am I doing that? Because I am not only not on anyone's team politically, I don't want to be seen as on anyone's team because I'm leading an institution that for half a century, the American people have said, we don't want you on anybody's team. President Obama constantly stressed to me, as did, I was confirmed 94-1. I met nearly all of those senators. They all said the same thing, Democrat or Republican. You need to keep the FBI out of politics, keep it independent.
Yep.
So there I am leaning into the curtain thinking, I do not want to be seen as on anybody's team. Then he notices me and he calls me forward. And it's funny, another part of the true story, as I walked across this long room, I'm thinking, oh my God, this is awful. And my wife is home watching it on TV live with one of my kids. And she turns to one of my kids and says, that's Dad's oh shit face.
Yes.
And so it was my oh shit face. And I walk forward and I know what he's doing. I'm not as politically experienced as you are, but I knew what he was doing. And I knew it even more when he grasped my hand and tried to pull me into a bro hug.
That's it.
And that's when I tightened my side. I'm tall, but not real strong, but strong enough to resist him. And in some ways it was worse because the cameras were to my left. And when I resisted, the only thing he could do was lean forward to my right ear.
Yeah.
And it looked to all the world like the man kissed me. And instead he just whispered, I really look forward to working with you. And then wanted me to stand up there with him. And I said, no, of course. Basically, I'm not worthy, meaning, are you out of your frickin' mind? And so I backpedaled back to my curtain. So why is it so bad? Because perception matters when you lead an agency like the FBI. And I was not on Trump's team. I was not on Hillary Clinton's team, even though at various points, partisans on both sides thought we were on the other side's team. I had to be apart from that. And Trump worked very, very hard to stop me from staying apart. And then, of course, then asked me to come to another thing that I thought was a group dinner. It turned out to be a one-on-one at a tiny table in the green room.
Yeah, that's the ambush conversation. That's the one you always know it's coming. You just don't know when it's coming. It's his way of kind of, locking in and making sure you understand the nature of how he sees the relationship or wants the relationship to be. You talked about, you know, the Hillary Clinton, and that seemed to be a troubling period during that the tail end of that campaign, Democrats say, but for your public statements and comments, Hillary would have won. I don't know about that. Politics is not that linear, and it certainly doesn't rest on one event. You know, if she spent a little bit more time in Wisconsin and in Michigan, and maybe things could have been different. But nonetheless, what is the thinking behind making, and we see this now with Merrick Garland, and I think a lot of people say he learned a lot from your experience in terms of how to deal with these more prickly public pronouncements and that may or may not relate to, you know, investigations. But what was that process like for you, given the nature of that campaign and where we were at that time, and then to come back and have the follow up? I mean, it was like a 1-2 punch almost.
Yeah.
How does that internalize itself and get to the point where you have that public pronouncement?
Yeah, it's, first of all, the thing is a total nightmare. I remember when the investigation opened in 2015, my deputy looked at me with a slight smile and said, you know, you're totally screwed, right? Meaning, in this polarized environment, half of our politically engaged are going to be furious no matter where you end up. And we managed to piss off both, I suppose, but which is amazing. But here's how it ended up. We worked very hard for a year and investigated the heck out of that case. And concluded that there was no there was no mm-hmm. case. And the idea that there's a resemblance between the Clinton case and Trump's current indictment is ridiculous. Oh, yeah. Only those who don't want to see can say it that way. But we ended up in a place where by the summer of 16, we were done. We had offered transparency to the American people so they would trust the results. Said, look, here's why. Here's what we did. Here's what we found. Here's what we think about it. And characterized her conduct, which I think you can't offer an explanation without characterizing the conduct, but then it was over. And the only thing left was for the Republicans to beat on the Department of Justice and the FBI, saying that we basically pulled our punches with Hillary Clinton. And mm-hmm. so both the Attorney General and I spent the summer defending the work. I testified repeatedly and took all their questions and fought back, saying, no, we did all this work. We're done. You can trust this result. The American people can trust this result. It's over. There's no there. Go away. The election can go on with us having nothing to do with it. That's where we want to be. And then I found out on October 27th that all of that sworn testimony was not true. That it not only was not over, that what they had found on Anthony Weiner's laptop, hundreds of thousands of her emails, not only was dwarfed anything we'd found before that, but my team said could change the result, and we can't finish this work before the election. And so all of a sudden you're sitting there as the FBI director and two norms are crashing into each other. You don't want anything to do with an election ever, if you can avoid it.
Right.
You also always correct testimony that you've given if it turns out to be untrue. And so I have two choices at that point. I can say nothing, which would be an action, and leave that testimony uncorrected, leave the American people with the impression that we're done, there's no there, go away, you can trust us, we're the FBI, we're the Department of Justice, or I can tell Congress that what I told you under oath is not true, but I don't know exactly what to make of it, but you ought to be on notice that we need to do some more work. Both of those doors lead to hell. Both of them suck. Mm-hmm. But there's only two alternatives. Either you speak or you don't speak. And not speaking is to conceal. And so the question for us was, which of those doors, which are both terrible, oh God, which path is most consistent with the values of the Department of Justice? And which is the least bad option? And so we chose the least bad option. And lots of people tell me they would have done differently. Okay, I respect that. I find that a little hard to believe. If you went back in time, you're really going to fool the American people before a presidential election?
Right.
Really? You're going to do that as the FBI director?
You're then stuck, James, with the problem of you don't know what those 100,000 emails and what's on Weiner's laptop, what's really there, right? So you don't know that. You know it all of a sudden, you've got to deal with it, right? And if she goes on and gets elected, then where are you? Right. And so you have, I mean, at what point do you come forward with what this additional information may or may not hold? It's always the challenge when there's a development in a story that you thought was concluded.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Facepalm America is a show for progressives and others on the left who want to keep up with the ridiculousness that this country dishes out, find out what cable news misses when they're waiting for Trump to appear at a podium, and also, every once in a while, get a laugh at how silly this hot mess of a nation of ours really is. If that's you, listen to Facepalm America. You can go to facepalmamerica.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.